morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, before you know it, a couple weeks, Barrett Jackson will be back for their fall show, so we'll talk about that. Interesting enough, Porsche is talking about wireless charging opportunities for their vehicles coming up in the future. Got an interesting story about the Right to Race bill in North Carolina. Some interesting news about Carvana being a local company here. An Elvis sighting. Yes, I said that. An Elvis sighting in the weird and unusual automotive news. Of course, we'll talk about what's going on with Formula One and NASCAR. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Jackson is going to be coming up here very shortly. That's going to be two weeks, actually. And let's talk about some of the cars that are going to be out there. And this situation, we're talking about the Rising Sun Legends, Japanese vehicles crossing the block at the Scottsdale auction. And these are all no reserve cars. Well, JDM vehicles have become popular with a growing segment at Barrett Jackson, looking for future collectors and current collectors. Technically, the term JDM refers to cars being bought and sold exclusively for the Japanese domestic market. However, over time, they've taken a broader sense and term, often describing vehicles built by Japanese automakers, no matter where they were originally designed to be exported or imported from. Now, Japanese cars began making the attention enthusiasts outside of Japan in the late 1960s when the Datsun 2000 Roadster proved its prowess for defeating their European rivals in the Sports Car Club of America, better known as the SCCA competition. 3 decades later, the golden era of classic Japanese tuner cars arrived in the late 90s. Icons of the period such as the Skyline GTR from Nissan, the Toyota Supra, and the Honda Acura in the U.S. and the NSX became popular. Their blend of performance and style secured them hero status in the Gran Turismo and Need for Speed video games. And of course, who can forget the Fast and Furious movie franchise, cementing their role into the global car culture. From their earliest victories of American racetracks to their dominance in the popular culture, Japanese cars have carved out a permanent home in the global automotive history. JDM icons continue to inspire enthusiasts and prove Japanese passion for performance and innovation is as influential as ever. These cars and awesome cars are going to be on sale at the best fall auction at Scottsdale. That's going to be at Westworld October 15th through the 18th. Some of the featured cars are going to be a 1995 Nissan Skyline GTR V-Spec, the 1993 Nissan GTR, along with a 1969 Datsun 2000 Custom Roadster. And who can forget the 1980 280ZX, the 10th anniversary edition. So the selected cars that are going to be available at Barrett Jackson. If you want some more information about the event, you can go to barrett-jackson.com for more information. Well, from the website The Drive, the headline reads, North Carolina's Right to Race law will help keep tracks open. Well, the state of North Carolina has ratified a bill, and that bill number is 926 into law, which includes the provision to protect the right to race. The idea basically is you can't move next to a racetrack and complain about the noise to try to get it shut down. Specifically, Article 10 of the North Carolina Legislature Bill, House Bill 926, is about the racing facility and racetrack nuisance immunity. Now, after defining what a racetrack is and specifically saying that these rules apply within a 3-mile radius of the perimeter of the property or continuous groups of properties where racing is located, a racing facility shall not be subject to any action brought by surrounding property owners under any nuisance or taking any cause of action if the developer of the racing facility obtains all permits required for the construction of the racing facility and established a vested right in the development of the property or a continuous group of properties where racing facility has been located before surrounding property owner or either purchased or real estate was constructed and building in the area of the racing facility. Now, SEMA sent out an email blast crediting Representative Alan Chesser for shepherding and putting together this bill, along with Governor of North Carolina Josh Steiner for signing off on this. Well, it makes sense that North Carolina would be a pro racing, where NASCAR has a huge presence with both major corporations and R&D shops. The state is home to plenty of tracks, too. In addition, big league motorsports venues like Charlotte Motor Speedway. North Carolina has about 40 active tracks that host events on an annual basis, and 28 short tracks that run on a nearly weekly basis, according to the North Carolina Motorsports Association. Now, the National Speedway Director shows that the state's racetracks are distributed all over the state. SEMA says North Carolina economic output in relation to motorsports is $3.8 billion annually, creating more than 20,000 jobs and paying over $1.3 billion in taxes and contributing to almost a half a million dollars in local taxes. Well, just happened to live, this, the writer of this article says, I happen to live just 3 miles from a dirt track myself in a different state. So in North Carolina, I would still be able to complain about it, although I wouldn't. You can hear sounds from my place, but when the wind is right on a Friday night, sounds like a line in a country song, if you ask me. They only run a few hours a week, so it's a relatively short season. Now, do understand people not wanting to hear racing sounds from their home, but with 40 odd tracks spread off across almost 54,000 square miles in North Carolina, I feel like those folks should be able to find houses outside of earshot of a racing venue. And folks, we've had this situation impact racetracks here in Phoenix. One of the tracks that was the Arizona Speedway, which was located out in Queen Creek, had been there for years. People moved in the neighborhood, complained about the racetrack, and the next thing you know, the racetrack turns into a housing development. So very excited that North Carolina is protecting their racetracks and the economic development that they bring. Well, the headline reads, Carvana is slowly becoming a Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, Jeep dealer for some unknown reason. We know Carvana. I mean, you know, the online used car dealership that grew explosively during COVID and helped fuel an explosive rise in used car prices during the day. Well, maybe you also remember their fault-free evaluation, or maybe some of their legal problems and some head-scratchers when an investment group called it, you know, a grit for the ages. You know, that's Carvana. Well, if you've been paying attention, the saga has a rather ambitious upstart. Carvana has dipped its toe into the new car sales water earlier this year with a purchase of a Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram dealership here in Arizona. And this week, Automotive News noted that the company has also added a second dealership that's going to be coming online in Texas. Now, both of these were purchased from existing chains. In fact, they're both Stellantis dealerships, which appears to be a reflection of the state of the retail business. Simply, they're available, those dealerships are. Now, after the Arizona dealership purchase, we reached out to Carvana for some background on the transaction. Company spokesperson characterized it as a small test in a single market. The company doubled down on that theme, according to Automotive News, with the purchase of the Texas dealership. Now, curious, is Carvana getting into the new car game after its biggest analog rival, CarMax, has gotten out? CarMax once operated several new vehicle franchises, but since has bailed on those. Well, given the fact that the little brick and mortar experience yet to be proved out, but we suspect that Carvana has additional yet unrealized and unheeded motivations for establishing a physical new car sales infrastructure in multiple markets. Given the legal roadblocks on online-only sales, a physical footprint is likely an advantage if Carvana needs to fall back should it face further headwinds in the online sales. So that's interesting. With Carvana being headquartered here in Arizona, the first dealership they bought was in Arizona, now with a second one in Texas. So we'll see where this takes the giant online car seller in the future. Says, wireless charging for your Porsche EV like an iPhone is a reality, but is it the future? Well, wireless charging EV is about to become a thing. Porsche will launch its feature on its 2026 Cayenne Electric, and it's pretty trick. While the option is yet to be priced out, Porsche engineers are convinced that this is the future because it's easier and more convenient than grabbing your cord and plugging it into your garage. And it might be code for, people are lazy and this is a solution. Well, according to the Porsche Group, You just park your car and it automatically charges. We want to make charging as easy as possible for our customers, and the driving is fun. So the charging needs to be super simple. You know that the technology works everywhere else at your home and your destination. Well, when the Porsche arrives next year, buyers will have three options. You can order it without the wireless charging and never have it. Order the car with the prep package for unnamed price, which is not fully knitted out with the hardware, or order the car with the full hardware package that enables wireless charging immediately. Now, buyers opting for the prep package will be ready for the future if they choose wireless charging as an option later on. The charging plate can be installed at the dealer. Now, the vehicle's inductive plate is mounted underneath the front motor and the cooling system. Porsche's wireless charging engineers say the system is 90% efficient as compared to 94% efficient for plugging the wire into the vehicle. For comparison, a smartphone is about 60% efficient when charging wirelessly due to the thermal loss and the smaller inductive plates. Now, charging wirelessly enables 11 kW of current transfer while the vehicle is in a normal ride height. Lifting the vehicle on its air suspension makes the system less efficient. Theoretically, lowering the vehicle would make it more efficient, but Porsche says it's designed to work at the normal ride height to make everything easier. Initially, the system will require a one-time pairing between the vehicle and the charging plate, like pairing a set of Bluetooth headphones. Once paired, the system will know and recognize the plate at the owner's garage, place of business, or home, thanks to GPS. When pulling into the garage, that where the GPS marks two green lines will appear on the touchscreen as a part of the front camera view. This will show where the vehicle is currently lined up, and a green circle on the virtual vehicle will show when inductive charging plate is located. The charging page shows up on the screen. The driver simply needs to drive over the plate, match the circles, kind of like a video game. Porsche wireless charging engineers said that the inductive charging system plates have a tolerance of 5.9 inches from the front and 7.8 inches left to right, so it doesn't have to be perfectly lined up every time for the circles to match up and for charging to be available. Now, once pulled over the pad, the system does check and ramps up to the 11 kW within seconds. But if an object gets near the plate, it will pause the charging session, but it will not lose the connection once the object is no longer detected, like a leg or a foot or a cat or a dog underneath the car. System will resume charging. Testing the system proved to be as simple as pulling into the garage spot, being centered, and going. This could be the future of charging. It's one less excuse for people who did not want an EV. Just park the car, and then it's automatically refueled. I think it's a brilliant idea, folks. I love the fact that Porsche has come up with a very, very simple solution for charging, and I absolutely see this be happening in other electric vehicles very soon. Formula One news, and the headline reads, Hamilton moved by the overwhelming support after the death of his beloved dog, Roscoe. Well, Lewis Hamilton has been overwhelmed by the support he has received following the death of his dog. The seven-time world championship announced that he had to put his 12-year-old bulldog to sleep due to complications from pneumonia. Roscoe had made a number of paddock visits since Hamilton adopted him alongside of his brother Coco back in 2013 and had a significant online following of his own of 1.5 million people. I've gotten a lot of messages, Hamilton said, quite overwhelming to be honest, to see how many people Roscoe touched around the world, and it was really heartwarming to receive the condolences. I've not been able to reply to everybody, but the most important thing in my life, it's been a very difficult experience, and I know many people in the world have gone through the same thing I've gone through. When you have a pet, when you own a pet and have a pet and love a pet, and it's such amazing love, it's a great experience. I just look forward to getting back into a car and doing what I love. Hamilton arrived at the Singapore Grand Prix seeking his first podium with Ferrari, and keen to thank his supporters for all the messages he's received regarding his dog. I think a lot of people, there's a lot of people out there that deserve a good result from my side and this team, and the people who've been following us, and we still have some work to do. I think it's moments like this where people really show up for you, and that's been overwhelming and really welcoming. After finishing a distant eighth in Baku, having started the weekend strongly, he's encouraged about the process and the progress that Ferrari has been making. I feel really optimistic about this weekend. There's a lot of things we've been learning over the past couple races. Execution wasn't perfect in the last race, and there's a lot of learning. And I'm hoping this weekend we can capitalize that and continue to move forward. Every weekend is difficult to say because it's the first time driving a Ferrari around Singapore. The car felt very good at the Lost Grand Prix. We just didn't carry it through the weekend. Obviously, last week we didn't have as much of a performance as we were hoping for. We've caught up over the last couple days, and I'm feeling optimistic about the car. I've got no clue how quick it's going to be, but obviously we're going to be fast. The Red Bulls are very quick, McLarens and Mercedes as well. We've got a lot of work to do, and I think qualifying, this is the key to this weekend. So I'm actually finishing up the Formula One race as I am recording the show this morning, so I will have the results of the Singapore Grand Prix before the end of the show. Let's talk a little NASCAR news. The reality is that we are in the playoffs in NASCAR, and this is an elimination race, and the headline reads, Reddick rockets to Charlotte Roval pole. Well, Tyler Reddick will lead the field to the green flag today on the Charlotte Roval as the playoff field continues to get trimmed one more time after today's race. Reddick is below the cut line and is facing elimination, but he won the pole with a lap of 95.5 and his second pole at the Roval and the 11th of his career. Yeah, incredible effort by the team today, Reddick said. It's been a track that we've been pretty strong with. The tire is a lot different, and obviously we saw that today. I'm really proud of the Jordan's Wings Camry. It's been a difficult week, but it's nice to get the job done. Obviously, we have some work to do tomorrow, but we did a good job today getting track position. I'll try to keep Shane behind me and see if we can get that done tomorrow. Reddick is 29 points below the cut line and starting the race. Now, Shane Van Gensbergen qualified second and will join Reddick on the front row. Van Gensbergen, who is seeking his 5th win out of 6 road course race starts this year. Ty Gibbs qualified in 3rd, Kyle Larson in 4th, Chris Buescher will start in 5th, and Larson is the defending winner at the Charlotte race. Michael McDowell, who's from Glendale, Arizona, qualified 6th, Christopher Bell 7th, Chase Briscoe in 8th, AJ Allmendinger in 9th, and Ross Chastain will start in 10th position. So the race is today, and that's going to be on the USA Network, and that starts at noon if you'd like to check that out. Well, the Formula One race just finished up, and a little bit of a surprise win. George Russell for Mercedes-Benz, who did start on the pole, so it's not that surprising, but won the race. Max Verstappen finished in 2nd. Lando Norris in 3rd, and Oscar Piastri in 4th, with the 3rd and 4th positions. McLaren has now gotten their 2nd Constructors' Championship in a row, so they have secured the Constructors' Championship because of the strength of the performance of their 2 cars, and we'll see what happens in the battle for the Drivers' Championship right now. Oscar Piastri is in the lead on that, and we've got 5 more races in the Formula One Championship to go, but the reality right now is that McLaren has won the Constructors' Championship. About what happened last weekend in NASCAR, we know what's going on this week, and the race is going to be starting shortly. The headline reads, Elliott muscles by battling the battling Toyotas to win in Kansas. Well, Chase Elliott charged through the door as Denny Hamlin opened on the final lap at Kansas Speedway and punched his ticket into the 2nd round of the NASCAR playoffs. Bubba Wallace was leading the race at the white flag over Hamlin, Chase Briscoe, Christopher Bell, and Elliott. Wallace cleared Bell for the lead on turn 4 and then coming to the white flag in double overtime. Well, the next thing you know, on the final 2 corners, Denny Hamlin ran himself and Wallace to the wall. Wallace hit the wall and Hamlin briefly cleared him. Brief enough for Elliott charging from the bottom, coming in contact with the descending Hamlin off turn 4 on his way to the finish line. It was a crazy finish to this race, folks. And Elliott said, I don't know, man. Everything just worked out perfectly for me. I had a great run through turns one and two. And the next thing you know, the car number six, we had a big run off turn two. The seas parted, and I was able to keep my momentum up. Those guys were fighting for the win. And the next thing you know, I crossed the finish line in first. Very proud of our team. Solid weekend, win or no win. Really nice to qualify well. It's certainly pretty cool. You never take this stuff for granted. These wins come very hard, and I appreciate every single one of them. Well, interesting. Hamlin, who was battling a power steering issue, swept both stages and led a race-high 150 laps, but reported a power steering issue under caution on lap 211. While he was leading, he maintained the top spot until the caution flew with 15 laps to go when he came down for a pit stop. Well, the reality was is that Denny Hamlin, who is the owner of the team with Michael Jordan of 2311 Racing, which is who Bubba Wallace races for. So by running Bubba up the wall to try to get the win, and he was going for his 60th win, so Denny Hamlin was highly motivated to try to win. He caused him not to win the race, and Bubba Wallace not to win the race, and Toyota not to win the race. So a lot of conversation this past weekend, or past week, about did Denny race too hard trying to get this win and really mess everything up for Toyota? And the reality is that probably he did. But race car drivers are trying to win races. And when you're in the playoffs and you're trying to win your 60th career NASCAR race, sometimes the blinders come off and you try to do anything you can to get the victory. So Elliott makes a big win and is very beneficial to the battles that the Toyotas were having up front. And we'll see what happens this weekend in the Roval in Charlotte. Just when you think you've heard about everything and saw everything, how about this? A retired aircraft. It's a Lockheed Jetstar that was originally owned by Elvis Presley. He bought in 1976. He only kept it for a few months before selling it to a Saudi Arabian sheikh. Well, now it's changed hands again, and it has become a motorhome. This was spotted by some folks in Arkansas as the motorhome was heading its way back from the Guilt by Association truck show in Joplin, Missouri. This is the same car show group that the CMT TV show Trick My Truck helped produce. That's not who produced this vehicle, though. But in reality, now the former Elvis Presley jet is now turned into, yes, folks, a motorhome. Once again, weird and unusual automotive news here on the Car Show. Well, time to talk some gas prices with our friends over at AAA right now. Average gas price is stable nationwide, same as it was last week, $3.13. Here in Arizona, average gas price is $3.53. Our neighbors over in New Mexico, a little bit cheaper, $2.91. Colorado, $2.96. Utah, $3.36. Nevada, $3.90. And over in California, you can expect to pay $4.65. And if you head just a little bit east over in Texas, average gas price is $2.75. All right, let's see what's going on here with our gas prices here in Arizona. Well, our friends in Quartzsite, Arizona have the cheapest gas in the state right now. The Love's Travel Stop at $2.79. That's in Quartzsite. The Arco Travel Center at $2.79 as well. In Salome, Arizona, $2.79 at the Pilot Station. In Clifton, Arizona, the three-way gas stop at $2.79 as well. And if you're cruising through Duncan, well, you can get the Chaparral Mini Mart at $2.80 a gallon. Well, gas prices are fairly stable here in Metro Phoenix. The Sahara Shell on 709 West Southern Avenue in Phoenix is $3.19. That's the least expensive gas in the Metro. The Chevron station on Kyrene in Chandler at $3.34. Sam's Club on Gilbert Road is $3.34. The Walmart over on Northsite in Scottsdale, that tends to be my go-to location, $3.35 a gallon. And then the Costco on Oak Street in Phoenix at $3.39 as well. Weather getting nice. The car shows are now all starting back up again after a long, hot summer. So there is the Sons of the American Legion 9th Annual Car and Bike Show, and that's happening next Saturday, October 11th. And that's going to be located at the American Legion Post 35 at 2240 West Chandler Boulevard. That's from 9 a.m. until 2. They're going to, and parking starts at 7 a.m. Food vendors, live DJ, 50-50 raffles, free admission if you're just coming to look at the vehicles, and is open to the entire community. All makes and models of cars are available to register. And once again, it's the Sons of the American Legion 9th Annual Car Show, October 11th, and that is going to be at the American Legion Post in Chandler. So if you live on the east side of town, or you just want to go see a cool car show, go check it out. Well, it's that time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I have some really nice rubber mats that I took out of my Lexus that I leased. They're slightly too big for my new Lexus. Is it possible to cut them down to fit the driver's side of the vehicle? And that's from Susan. Sure, hack away, Susan. I don't know how thick the rubber is, but if it's not super thick, you should be able to cut the mats with a pair of heavy-duty scissors, or prevail with a friend who has a jigsaw. Now, there's one caveat. These floor mats these days have a way to attach the floor and hold them in the place. It's often a snap or a peg that fits in a hole into the mat, and that is important. If the floor mat slides out of place and gets in the way of your pedals, or starts creeping up on top of the accelerator, or less likely gets stuck underneath the brake pedal, none of those are good for safe driving. So, check out your old driver's side to make sure that the mat has the connecting system that your Lexus uses, and then factor in that fixed point when you start to do your trim. Now, if the attachment point is the same, you'll only need to trim around the edges. And here's my next suggestion. Visit your Lexus dealer with a roll of brown paper. Tell someone in the parts department that you'd like to look at the floor mat for your new Lexus. When they bring it out, get down on the floor, lay it on top of the piece of brown paper, and trace it. Now, when they look at you like you've literally lost your mind, just smile and tell them you're in art school and you're doing a still life study of floor mats. Then when you get home, use the template, lay it out on top of your old mat, mark the connection point, and then use that as your guide. If that doesn't work, well, looks like you're going to head back to someone who cuts their own hair, and because the attachment point is wrong, then just throw it out and go back to the dealer and buy yourself a new floor mat. Nothing would have been lost except a little time, and then, of course, maybe your reputation for sanity. Good luck. Yeah, it's interesting. I was driving a customer's car the other day, and it had an old, bad floor mat that was just literally sliding around underneath my feet when I was driving, and I thought, this is absolutely not safe. So safe floor mats in the right locations is critical to safe driving. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.